And now we turn to the very key question of using this kind of information, how it is used, how it is embedded in the crop simulation models. And Ken, that's what we've asked Ken to talk about.
Okay, thank you. And this will do the foreword. Okay. Yeah. Okay, climate change involves increased CO2, increased day or night temperature, altered rainfall frequency, and also altered growing season. Now, a lot of us would like to use crop models as strategic tools to evaluate outcomes, yield, irrigation demand, as you change a strategy, like changing crops, cultivars, or sowing dates, or irrigation under current and proposed future climate. Another way is to also look at adaptation, like changing genetics, improving genetics, or other ways to mitigate. Now, the crucial question here is that crop models contain code and coefficients that describe how the crop processes respond to climatic factors, temperature, CO2, solar radiation, and other variables. The question I would ask is, how sound is the theory and the basis for accounting for climatic effects like CO2, temperature, and how well have the models been tested? And this is a lot of something that everyone that's working with models should be doing, testing responses to these climate change factors. So my objectives will be, in this paper, we'll be looking at testing crop models for response to climate change, discussing the types of data and the theory needed for the testing, and give a little bit of examples of testing and parameterizing models. Okay, data sets. The first thing you really need is published papers or data on the theory, the code, and the equations. The next one is if you're looking at the processes, photosynthesis, for example, or pollination. So you need data for both parameterizing and checking at process level. Then you get into data testing outcomes. This may be relative outcomes, response to CO2 and temperature from various phytotrons controlled environment systems, but you have to get up to the field for absolute. And then I have the fourth type of data would be field data, because you have to bring yourself back to the absolute yield levels if you're talking about assessments for real production situations. So both in-season data on growth and yield, and you can get this sometimes from diverse temperature ranges or droughts. So data sources, sunlit controlled environment chambers, phytotrons both have good CO2 temperature control. I don't really like phytotrons for a lot of reasons. It should be relative only, usually low light, potted plants, root bound, and they're not bordered. And I don't believe any drought data taken from a phytotron unless you're dealing with something at leaf level. The other data sets would be free air CO2 enrichment, where you can do CO2 drought studies. Absolute data, I put a question mark on here because you can also sample badly from face experiments. Tiny little samples, one plant samples, okay? Multiply it out too far, so you can mess up there too. And then the other way is you can take field studies over elevation, latitude, sowing dates on temperature, drought variation. Now, this is very quickly. Most of you know the crop grow models, the series models predicting growth of grain legumes and cereals. The process level, because you start off predicting the input and conversion and losses of in terms of carbon balance, nitrogen balance, water balance. Crop grow has a leaf to canopy assimilation, which has hedgerow light interception. We take hourly temperature from MaxMin daily data, hourly solar radiation from daily, and it does direct beam and diffuse light capture for sunlit and shaded leaves, and then we integrate instantaneous rate over sunlit and shaded leaves and to get an hourly rate, which we integrate over the day. All the crop processes except AET are computed hourly, and that's because we're still running the older Penman, Monteith, and Priestley-Taylor daily. Series maize uses a daily radiation use efficiency approach, and usually with mean temperatures. Crop grows, photosynthesis, leaf level. We attempt to capture some Farquhar kinetics, the L version, leaf level, photosynthesis. The paper by Alagaswamy described this for soybean, and it does work well for soybean peanut. The series model has an XY lookup function that I'll show you later for CO2 sensitivity. This was too responsive to CO2 coming from older data summarized in the early 90s. I'll show the figure. Series wheat and rice, similar function, but that one from the data still works well. Transpiration algorithm needs to be retested again and improved. It was a function that reduced transpiration as a function of increased stomatal resistance as CO2 increased. It works pretty well for crops with high leaf area that doesn't change much, rice, maize, under CO2 enrichment. When the LAI increases, you get all sorts of compensations and it needs someone to look at a little better. The leaf photosynthesis in crop grow uses the modified asymptotic exponential equation, but these two features, quantum efficiency and AMAX, are affected by temperature and CO2. We use Farquhar equations at limiting low light, collapse down to this equation, describing the REBP limited or light limited phase, where this is CI, internal CO2, this is gamma star, compensation point. This 1 over 2 represents electrons per photon, and this part represents the effectiveness of using electrons to fix the CO2. We want always to reference this, so we set the quantum efficiency to 0.054 mole per mole from Elwering and Bjorkman, and then use this scalar to normalize that function. So this is 1 when we're at 350 part per million CO2 and 30 degrees Celsius. At light saturation, that same efficiency holds on this part of the equation, but this 1 over, you have so many multiple hits, you have to have another way of calculating that. Now, this is the shape of quantum efficiency in response to intracellular CO2. This is very similar to the function developed by Elwering and Bjorkman. We also get the same kind of response of declining efficiency with temperature, which I'm not showing. So now we're looking at theory, going to data to test what some of the intermediate outcomes are, like quantum efficiency. This is looking at a test. This is the Elagoswamy paper, testing processes, outcome of theory. We took data from Griffin and Liu, and we input the light, CO2, temperature, specific leaf area nitrogen, and there's no calibration here. This is what the model predicted. We were pretty pleased to see that happen. Here's another data set from Sims. It doesn't quite get it, but again, we're still pretty happy that we're getting the shape of the responses to CO2 correctly. Now, how do you go? The next step is to play with real data sets in the field, at least solar radiation, temperature, long season, and I'm going to show you some sensitivity analysis of the response of canopy carbon exchange, biomass, seed yield, harvest index to CO2, and then we'll compare it. So this would be leaf level photosynthesis response to temperature. This would be the canopy gross photosynthesis response to, excuse me, to CO2, response to CO2, not temperature. This would be the simulated total biomass against rising CO2. This would be grain yield. These are not data points. These are meant to show that you get, this is a 29% response to increasing grain yield with increasing CO2 from 330 to 660. And this is 34% increase in biomass. More increase in biomass than in grain yield. Quite typically. In fact, this is mimicked. This is data from one of Dr. Allen's students. Declining harvest index observed from 160 to 990. Model simulations show that shape. The crop model doesn't know that it's supposed to do this. This is a natural outcome from more stimulation during the vegetative phase. Therefore, the numerator-denominator change. Okay. Next step you should do is start comparing relative responses to the published metadata, and Ainsworth did this for soybean in this paper in Global Change Biology. Here's metadata for leaf assimilation, canopy assimilation, seed yield, biomass harvest index. The crop grow model with the leaf level form was simulating a little less leaf photosynthesis, supposedly less leaf photosynthesis or canopy than this, but this data set I think had leakage problems. So probably this is the one I want to compare it to. Seed yield prediction within 2% of the percent response and biomass response and harvest index predicted to be reduced. Very quickly, I assisted Jerry Hatfield in this U.S. Synthesis Assessment Product Report, and what we did was look at the literature for information on response to CO2 temperature. Surprisingly, we really didn't use the models to do that assessment. We took CO2 effects from published data on soil plant atmosphere research chambers, open top, phytotrons, face, elevated temperature responses from published studies also on the same things, and regional and latitude shifts. So this is kind of metadata. I'm going to show you a table that's a little bit more complicated here, and this is showing the percent response of these processes to doubling CO2, leaf photosynthesis, biomass, grain yields, stomatal conductance, and ET. First, you'll notice that the response of sorghum and corn, C4, very low for photosynthesis and biomass. The average for the grain yield for the C3s, 37% response of photosynthesis, biomass grain yield about 31-32%. Stomatal conductance, like Bruce Kimball, decreased about 38%. Remember, this is doubling. This is not the 190. Okay, so the data is consistent. Now, canopy ETs only reduced on average about 9%. And this is because, again, you've got energy balance that brings temperature up and compensation.
Did you measure the temperature of the canopy?
We had about three SPAR experiments where we did measure temperature, and it's about 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer. Again, that's consistent with Kimball's, too, because his temperature or CO2 bump's not as much. Okay. This is testing this is the metadata from that last table. So it's the same data. And this is what the crop grow model for soybean predicts for using the leaf level mechanistic response for soybean compared to metadata for peanut. Only one test here, and this is with field data. This is not a CO2 response data set. Okay? And I think this had to do with being under non-limiting nitrogen. There's a C version, a daily version that we use as a radiation use efficiency multiplier. This is after calibration. It was over-predicting a little bit, not too much, 3% maybe, before we did the recalibration for this next release. The cotton model is interesting. First of all, the data shows greater responsiveness to CO2. The model did the same thing, whether you use the leaf or the, and I'm not sure what's coming out of that to cause that. If you do this under nitrogen limitation, greatly limited response. And data sets document that also on rice, for example. The series models for wheat and rice with non-limiting N, about the right response, so we didn't change it. And this is corn. This is that function, lookup function. Here's the original function of sensitivity to CO2 for series maize with increasing CO2. This is the old one. Here's the new one. It's about cut in half. The function for the C3 series crops, which hasn't changed. So the summary on this is that the leaf photosynthesis version works pretty well for the late grain legumes. Daily version had to be recalibrated down a little bit. The series maize, the C4s, we had to drop that function down a lot. But I would also say we're kind of short on data in response for sorghum and maize. The C3 sorghum or series models worked well. All of them showed simulated water greater response under drought stress. And this is consistent with other data sets. And they also showed less response to CO2 under N limitation, and we got this with rice, with wheat, with cotton, and even dry bean. I'm going to go very quickly on this one. You can do the same things with temperature response. Okay, predicted response, 2 minutes, okay. Depends on many functions, and you can test at the level of individual processes, photosynthesis. This is a function for grain set and for pod set, and get a total simulated response to temperature for grain yield. And you want to test that. This is the model, the observed data in the sunlight controlled environment chambers, failure at 39 degrees. Model simulation was predicting, and we didn't change the model. It predicted sufficiently well. That shows the system. We tested peanut failure at about the same point, 39 to 40. Haven't changed that model. Tested bean. I'll talk more about that later. We have not tested cereal rice, which has a failure at 35 degrees mean temperature, but we need to do that. We've not tested sorghum. It has the same failure point temperature that rice does. 35, surprising. So the conclusions on what you need to test models is you need a model that's based upon measurable physiology inputs, published literature on how climate factors affect processes, test relative responses in controlled environment chambers to climatic factors, then get in the field to test full season growth and time course with diverse temperature environments, phase studies where you can find it, and then you still can do optimization against broad yield trials across locations. And the last little point is, if you're looking at changes in climate and sowing dates, if you're going to try to do this in a different sowing date, you need a model that has frost injury, freeze kill, pollen non-viability, and terminations under these extreme stresses. Okay.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.